Hello everyone, this is Paul Douglas Boyer. Thank you for joining me on the Mad Money Machine, show number 105 in the first part of April. Now I should tell you that April is in fact one of the particularly dangerous months to speculate in stocks, you know. Now the other months are July, January, September, October, November, May, March, June, December, August, and February. Also, there are two times when a man should not speculate, when he can't afford it, and when he can. That's Mark Twain. Mad Money Machine is so very proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. I encourage you to go to their website, point your browser to IFA, and click on that icon in the middle that says take their risk capacity survey. And if you've already done it, and it's been a little while, go ahead and do it again, because with the changes in the recent market, you may find that your capacity risk has shifted a bit, your attitude towards risk. Well, Mark Hebner at Index Funds Advisors has written a book called Index Funds, the 12-Step Program for Active Investors. And just like it says, there are 12 steps, one for every month of the year. And for April, being the fourth month, the fourth step is time pickers. And he's got a number of quotes at the beginning of each chapter relevant to that chapter's topic. For example, in step four, the time pickers, he's got a quote from Charles Ellis, the author of Winning the Loser's Game. Here's what Charles Ellis has to say about trying to time the market. He says, market timing is a wicked idea. Don't try it ever. William Bernstein, author of The Intelligent Asset Allocator, said there are two kinds of investors, be they large or small. Those who don't know where the market is headed, and those who don't know that they don't know. Then again, there's a third type of investor, the investment professional, who indeed knows that he or she doesn't know, but whose livelihood depends upon appearing to know. Benjamin Graham, legendary investor and author, Warren Buffett's mentor, said, if I have noticed anything over these 60 years on Wall Street, it is that people do not succeed in forecasting what's going to happen to the stock market. Jeffrey Lederman wrote an article in Business Week called Market Timing, a Perilous Ploy. And he looked at Mark Hulbert's results. He says, Hulbert's conclusion, none of the newsletter timers beat the market over a 10-year period. The average return was 11.06%. During the same period, Standard & Poor's 500 stock index earned 18.06% annually. And what does Mark Hulbert himself say? I tell investors to put a large portion of their stock investments in index funds. Well, don't you just love it in the recent market, if you watch these silly shows, CNBC or Fox Business, and they get on there and they ask the guys, well, have we reached the bottom of the stock market? As if anybody can, with any sort of certainty, answer that question whatsoever. The stock market rockets up by 400 points, and people are talking about that as if that's something significant, and as if it's something that you can making a good investment decision upon. Well, I'm here to tell you that I have tried to time the market and failed. Now, of course, if you watch Jim Cramer's Mad Money, he tries to do two things. He tries to not only pick a specific stock, but also time the market with that specific stock. So he's got to be right something like four ways on a stock pick in order to make money over just investing in index funds for the long term. And of course, over the long term, let's say over the course of 10 years, if you were to try an active investing approach, how many buy and sell decisions would you have to make over 10 years compared to buying and holding a portfolio of index funds? Can you imagine watching Cramer and trying to say, all right, should I buy a Procter & Gamble today or should I hold it? What about General Electric? Should I hold that or should I sell it? Over a 10-year period? My goodness gracious, what an incredible waste of time. Let's pull something out of the Madman Machine tool crib. Well, I went into my Delicious account the other day and someone sent me a link for a tool called inspected.com. INSPECTD.com. Inspected.com allows you to test your stock market skills against real historic data. We'll show you a random chart from the past and you try to guess whether the stock rose or dropped. We'll give you $100,000 in play money to test your skill, but beware, it's addictive. Well, for all the chart traders out there, this is a great tool to prove that nobody can pick stocks based on the direction of the previous history of stock market prices. Of course, there are people out there who have accounts with this thing whose accounts are worth more than $100,000, but there's probably an equal number of people playing the game whose accounts are worth less than $100,000, just proving that it's random chance as to which way stock prices go. Well, I encourage you to go out and try your hand at picking stocks based on previous stock price histories. Go to inspected.com, and like other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. Oh, and by the way, the tool I mentioned on the last show, iGotKramered.com, that wasn't working, is back in action now. So iGotKramered is no longer Kramered. So go check it out. Add your story to the YouTube list. Baseball season is underway, and the Washington Nationals moved into their brand new stadium, which people said looks very nice. There was an article on the WUSA9.com webpage. Stadium visitor told to hit delete button. Like a number of people without a ticket to the Nationals game Sunday, Mark Butler stood outside the left field gate and watched some of the historic event from a distance. The Minnesota man carried a digital camera to capture the memories. For a member of the Uniformed Division of the United States Secret Service, Butler captured too much. 9 News Now photographer Greg Guise was rolling when an officer approached Mark Butler. Butler said the officer demanded he delete any pictures that showed the security checkpoints set up to screen fans for the visit by President George Bush. "It's kind of like not being in America," Butler said. Butler said he was not interested in the security, but in the part of the stadium you could see beyond the gate. Secret Service spokesman Malcolm Wiley told 9 News Now that there is no hard and fast rule in this situation. Wiley said it is a situation left to the discretion of the officer. When specifically asked about the legality of ordering someone to delete pictures, Wiley answered, "We have the authority to ask them to remove the picture from the camera." Arthur Spitzer, legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union of the National Capital Area, said, "Ask could be the operative word in that statement by Wiley." Spitzer said he knows of no law in these circumstances that would allow law enforcement to force someone to delete pictures. And I've heard of this before in other places, that sometimes a law enforcement officer will ask you to do something, but they actually don't have authority to tell you to do it. So next time you get asked to do something, ask them back, "Are you asking me or telling me?" So, you know, every once in a while I'll go out to coinflation.com just to check the price of what silver and gold coins are worth now that metal prices are fluctuating. And they also have some links to headline stories out there that are interesting, usually about coins and money. This one is a link to an article by APM Marketplace, the public radio show, entitled "A Penny Hoarded is Two Earned." And it's about a guy, Todd Kramer, only with a K, who in his garage has 4 tons of pennies. And here's what he does. He says he goes to some banks in his area And he takes a few paper bills from his wallet, and he comes out with about 120 pounds worth of pennies from the bank. And he's got some kind of machine where it will automatically detect which of the pennies are real copper, the ones before 1982, and the ones that are just that silly old zinc junk. Now, that's a mad money machine. And he keeps the copper ones, and he takes the zinc ones back to some other banks in his area. He dump banks, he calls it. And the whole idea here is that he can spend, say, $1,000, get $1,000 worth of the copper pennies, and they're actually worth something like $2,400 if he were able to sell them for the copper metal. Of course, Congress passed a law that says it's illegal to melt down copper pennies and nickels. But if they get rid of pennies, then it suddenly will be legal again to do that. So I guess he is sitting on a possible investment of over 100% by pulling this little stunt. It's a shame there aren't any copper dollars, or it would make his toil a lot easier. Well, I've been known to talk a time or two on this show about video games, and I have finally played a video game that I bought a long time ago. I've told you I bought the Orange Box, primarily to get the game, you know, the first-person shooter game Half-Life 2, which was indeed a lot of fun. But there's also a game included on the package called Portal. And I'm sure a lot of you guys are familiar with Portal. Well, I hadn't been familiar with Portal. I did hear Paul Theroux and Leo Laporte talking about it on Windows Weekly show. And he rated it highly, said it was a great puzzle game. And so I decided to play it the other day, and it was fantastic. What a fantastic game. Some people online are calling it the perfect video game. it starts out beautifully. I love the premise. If you've ever been to Walt Disney World and you were on that ride Alien Encounter, I think you'll know what I mean when I say it's somewhat similar to this game Portal, if you've ever played it. Basically, it's a game that's constructed in such a way that you have to create an in and an out portal to get over to some place in a puzzle-like manner. It's a lot of fun. Fun for the whole family. Highly recommended. Back just a couple days after the Bear Stearns credit crisis, March 17th, a couple of days later, on the web, on several blogs, some people had posted the alternative lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody, Queen's famous song. They're so funny, the parody lyrics talking about the credit crunch and is this the real price and so forth. I thought, man, I'd like to turn that into real music. You know, I'd like to somehow play that and make it a song and have it performed on this show. Well, lo and behold, Adam Curry's show the other day, The Daily Source Code, one of his good buddies that always comes up with great music, Jeff Smith, G-E-O-F-F, he did this. And so here's Jeff Smith performing the parody, Bohemian Financial Rhapsody.
Is this the real price? Is this just fantasy? Financial landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up at your buys and see. I'm now a poor boy, high yielding casualty. Cause I bought it high, watched it blow, rating high, value low. Anyway, the fan goes, doesn't really matter to me. To me. Mama just killed my fund, quoted CDOs instead, pulled the trigger, now it's dead. Mama, I had just begun, these CDOs have blown it all away. We'll be right back.
overfed.
Bernanke, can you save the whole market? One of those immune is very, very fine.
Super senior
CDO.
Magnifico. I'm on a subprime CDO fantasy.
He's on a subprime CDO fantasy. Spare the wanted call, no baby for all.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Hello to come, we will not let you go.
Let it go.
Hello to
we will not let you go.
Let it go.
Mamma mia, mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go. Yes, and be a devil for a sign for me, for me, for me.
So you think you can find me and spit in my eye in the mountain and call me and leave me to die?
And speaking of Bohemian Rhapsody, I had a thought just this morning, thinking about that song, singing that song in my head, you know, is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? I thought, sounds like the movie The Matrix. And I was thinking, I should mash up together some clips from the movie The Matrix with the song of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody and see how well it fit together. And then I thought, I wonder if anyone's done that before. Let me go out to YouTube and check. And so I type in Matrix and Bohemian, and sure enough, there's like four people have already done that out at YouTube. And they're okay. They're not fantastic, but it is interesting. Every time, you know, in each of the cases, when they have the lyric, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead, you have the image of Trinity with a gun against the head of one of the agents, blowing him away and him falling down. Which goes to prove there's nothing new under the sun. Speaking of music, who's your favorite on American Idol? I have to tell you my favorite. You remember last year my favorite was Melinda Doolittle. And she didn't win it. And she didn't even come in second. I think she came in third after Blake Lewis. And this year my favorite is probably not going to win it either, because I think that little kid's going to win it. But my favorite is David Cook. Probably one of my favorites of all time, next to Daughtry. I like the rockers. I remember when Daughtry did that Johnny Cash song, changed it around a little bit. That's what I like about David Cook, is how he's taken these old songs and using the new revised versions of them to change them up a lot. And that makes it a whole lot of fun.
Dear taxpayer, we are pleased to inform you that the United States Congress passed and President George W. Bush signed into law the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, which provides for economic stimulus payments to be made to over 130 million American households. Under this new law, you may be entitled to a payment of up to $600, $1,200 if filing a joint return, plus additional amounts for each qualifying child.
So what do you think about this economic stimulus payment? I got a thing in the mail from the IRS, and on the back it says, how to determine your stimulus payment. And it's got all this gobbledygook about net income tax liability and qualifying income. And in some cases, it says you'll get zero. In other cases, it says you will not receive a stimulus payment. And it says your stimulus payment will be $300 or $600 for joint filers. Oh, what a bunch of junk. What a bunch of silliness. Why didn't they just have lower taxes to start with? How about that for economic stimulus? Why, if this economic stimulus works now, why not stimulate the economy every year, even in the good times? Why don't we continue to stimulate the economy? This is silly, political, feel-good We really need to get the politicians out of the business of stimulating the economy, don't you think? What is going on behind the scenes with our money? And you know, for most of the previous 6,000 years, gold itself was used as money. Gold is one of the elements on the periodic table, and it is rare. Most people just can't go out in their backyard and dig up some gold, and that's why it has value. And that's why gold is money, because it has value. Why do we need money? So let's go back to the basics. What is money? Money is a way for me to exchange my work for some of your work. Instead of bartering directly one thing for another, we have this intermediary token system that helps us keep track of how much our work is worth. Now, if we were to make these tokens out of wood or plastic, then the token probably wouldn't be worth very much now, would it? A token made out of wood probably shouldn't be worth much more than the work it takes to produce the token, which if you have a machine to make them is infinitesimally small, because wood is so plentiful. And the same with plastic. But gold, however, is rare and has value on its own. And so when produced in the shape of a coin and standardized, we now have a fixed value for that money. Now, throughout all those 6,000 previous years of history, there's been this struggle between real money and government-controlled money. And right now, the pendulum has swung completely to government-controlled money. I would love to see us have real money again, beautiful coins made out of precious metals. And then, of course, paper certificates that are redeemable in precious metal coins. Let's review the results of the 2008 Lazy Portfolio Smackdown, sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. If you're new to the show, here's what we have going on. At the beginning of the year, I asked people out at diehards.org, and you, the listener, to contribute your lazy portfolio of index funds or ETFs to see which of you could create a portfolio that had the best return to risk ratio in three bands. All right, those with small risk, 0 to 8% risk, those with medium risk, say between 8 and 16% risk, and those in the high risk category, 16 or higher. And we have about 66 entries or so into the game. And I'm also keeping track of some of the professional lazy portfolios. These are guys that are doing this for a living. They're investment advisors. And you can see this out at the madmoneymachine.com website. And also FolioDex has been created and is tracking these portfolios as well. And so out at the website, when you click on Lazy Portfolio Smackdown, madmoneymachine.com/portfolios, you'll see that of the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown game entries, the number one winner still after 3 months is Mud Fud, who invests in exactly one fund, the 2X China Bear Fund. Well, what a good market timing, stock picking, fund picking strategy that turns out to be. Of course, for every one that picks something like that, there's got to be a winner out there. Tex Williams also picked several bear funds. Mudfud's up 25%, Tex Williams up 14.5%. Now on the page, I have broken out separately the results of the portfolios through March 31st, and then you have to click a link somewhere to see what the components of the individual portfolios are. For example, if we wanted to go see what Quasimodo, the third place entry, is, we'd click on the link for the individual entries and look at ID number 3 in that list that comes up. And you can see that Quasimodo is invested in four funds, 10% in the PIMCO Commodity Real Return Strategy, 10% in the American Century Global Gold Fund, 50% in the Vanguard Long-Term Treasury, and then 25% in American Century Target Maturities 2025. And Quasimodo for the year to date is up about 5%. Then we have Cosmo up 2.5%. And as of March 31st, everybody else is in the negative category. How's the Scott Burns Six Ways from Sunday portfolio doing? It is down 2% year to date. If we go out and take a look at the Folio Dex rankings, as of April 2nd, Quasimodo is the one with the highest Sharpe ratio at 1.39, his return at showing at about 4% after the big jump on April Fool's Day. My new portfolio, the Mr. Sharpe portfolio, is up 4.3%. It has a Sharpe ratio of 1.18. And the complete laggard in the whole shooting match is my good buddy Brooks. He's down 12% with a Sharpe ratio of minus 4%. Better luck next time, Brooks. Of the professional lazy portfolios, Mr. Sharpe is leading the pack. Then I've added one due to suggestion out at someone at the diehards.org/forum blog. They suggested that I add the Harry Brown permanent portfolio. And, of course, you pick these things in hindsight. Well, it's doing well. It has a return year-to-date of 1.58% with a Sharpe ratio of 0.83%. It's kind of a strange portfolio. It invests 25% in the Vanguard Total Stock Market, 25% in the iShares Lehman 20 Plus, ticker TLT. Then we have the cash at 25%, and then gold at 25%. So, yeah, that'll work in the that'll work when it works, but when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And the laggard in the professional stock picks, the lazy investors, Cramer stocks of 2007. I created a portfolio with all of Cramer's stocks that he picked last year, you know, including Apple and Goldman Sachs and New York Stock Exchange and so forth. It has a Sharpe ratio of minus 2.61 and a return year-to-date of minus 10.58. And another one at the bottom there is Mal Kiel's China Growth Fund. In his book, From the Wall Street to the Great Wall, rather, he has a recommended portfolio of China investments. And it is down 11.16% for the year with a Sharpe ratio of minus 2.41. You can see all the results at madmanmachine.com/portfolios and at foliodex.com. I am so glad that you downloaded this show to your iPod, to your computer, to your Zune, or to whatever. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes tons of pennies to make a Mad Money Machine. Next week is going to be a different kind of show. I'm going to read something to you, a story that I found very interesting. So please do come back. In the meantime, I'd like for you to visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors. Go out to IFA.com, check out the new big table out there, and see the results of all 20 of their numbered portfolios. And get a copy of Mark Hebner's fantastic book, Index Funds, this 12-step program for active investors. You'll never invest another way ever again. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. Thank you so much. See you next Friday.